Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 97-year-old Robbie Robinson of Henderson, Nevada. Originally from Compton, California, he served as a reconnaissance scout with the 11th Armored Division during World War II, experiencing his first taste of combat during the Battle of the Bulge. We heard him say that he did not have the proper clothes or shoes for the extreme weather conditions they would face in Belgium and Luxembourg.
My toes got not frozen, but almost like frostbite. Probably that's what happened. And for about 6 weeks, I walked on my heels because it took too much effort and pain to put my feet down on the ground.
And let's remind everybody listening that you're a California kid. Right. You've never been in weather like this before, right?
No. Well, I got to go to Idlewild to the snow a few times, but Bastogne was an entirely different thing. First place, you're under fire. The second thing is that you didn't have the proper clothing, and you didn't really know what was going on other than the fact that you're getting bombarded, artillery shells breaking into the Ardennes Forest. And we knew we were in a combat, but we didn't even know it was Bastogne until probably a week later. And then by then we were in Luxembourg, so we'd moved on, you know. Finally, they got to the point where they were giving us information and assigning us an objective, and we knew what we were supposed to do and what we were supposed to look for. But one time there, it was just maybe a week or so after we were in that battle, we were up in the kitchen truck. The kitchen truck had three stoves in it. That's where we cooked for the troops. Some of the guys found out that I knew how to make donuts, so they talked us into going up there, and me and a couple other guys would make donuts. And so we were up there. Well, my buddy took off for, I've forgotten what, maybe to go to the restroom. Anyway, I was by myself up there in the truck, and I heard this kind of tapping on the tailgate. So I came out. Well, there are two screens between you and the dark. So you open the first canvas and then stand in between that one and the second one and make sure it's down so no light would show. And then you open the second one. Now you see two silhouettes standing out there at the tailgate. So I saw, well, okay, there's just a couple of guys. So I said, come on up. So they climbed up into the truck. Well, German and English is so close that come and see here or come here is the same practically. In fact, it's a Germanic language, essentially it's English. So they get into the daylight, into the night there, into the light for the thing where we were in the kitchen. And here's two young, I'd say probably maybe 16, 17, German soldiers. And they were scared, hungry, and cold. So we give them a cup of coffee, a couple of donuts, and they put their hands up and said, comrade, which is actually the signal that they wanted to surrender. So we said, yeah, all right. So then they drank their coffee, and then we said, okay, you know, follow me, come here. And they went over to the tent where the commanding officer was, went in there, got permission to go into the CO, talk to him, walked in there with these two guys and said they wanted to surrender, and the captain looked at me like he was absolutely astounded, and then he had the corporal of the guard take the two guys away, and he pointed at me and he said, you I want to see. And he said, now, it's fine that they wanted to surrender, but the next time that you take a German soldier prisoner, take his gun away.
You forgot an important detail, huh?
Yeah, didn't even occur to me. And they were little teenagers. They were much younger than I was, you know. And I actually felt sorry for them. They were probably the end of the German army. They'd just been grabbed off the street and thrown into a uniform and had no idea what was going on. I doubt if they had any basic training at all. Anyway, that was it.
Well, and a moment ago, you know, you were talking about how cold it was at the Bulge, the effect it had on your toes, and so many guys who were there have shared that with me. My grandfather was a doctor at the Bulge, and he said that's what he treated most was frozen feet. And you lived it, so maybe it's not as big a deal in your mind now as it was then, but I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes. You're sleeping in the snow. Yeah. You're freezing to death. You can't even walk on your toes, and you don't know how much longer you're going to do this. So what was it that kept you persevering and enduring those kind of extreme conditions?
We had a a pretty good pride, a good group of soldiers. There were a few skirmishes and things like this, but there was you were part of a great organization, and you know, you performed, and you realized that, you know, this is not a game. So you did what you were trained to do. And fortunately, when they put you through that basic training and tank stuff like that, and all the maneuvers, various things that we did, you built a sense of pride. So you were glad that you could do that, you know. It was something that I think is like they call it, pride or morale. You tried very hard to do as good as you possibly could, because it wasn't to get recognition. You actually realized you were in a war and people were shooting at you, and you had to shoot back.
Which tells me you definitely had some close calls and might even still be carrying some shrapnel, and we can talk about that. One of the things that you've held on to is your original map for G2 that showed everywhere that you guys went. And a moment ago, you said that, you know, initially when you first got there, which is right at the start of the bulge, that you guys didn't really know what you were doing, but then they told you some of what you were looking for. So can you give us maybe an example of how that would work, what they tell you, how many guys you go out with, and what you're trying to accomplish?
Well, essentially, reconnaissance consisted of going out, and they'd give you a general idea of what the terrain looked like. They had a pretty good idea of what the country looked like. They wanted you to go out and survey the area, memorize as much as you possibly could of what's going on, and then come back and then point to it on a map what was going on. There's a group of soldiers, or there's a camp or whatever. You didn't have any kind of aerial surveillance. You know, you had to actually point out, well, maybe 15 miles or 10 miles away, there was a large group of tanks or people that you knew where in general they were. And that was it. I mean, you go out and find what's going on and come back and tell them. It's just like hide and seek. That's what it is. You go out and find them and come back and tell about it. And now it's entirely different.
Well, you hope you come back and tell them about it, because you told us earlier, if people were listening closely, that of the 22 guys in your platoon, 18 of them were killed or wounded. What were some of the things you had to watch out for, be prepared for, or be on the lookout for?
You could run into an encampment and not even know it until you know. I had an incident one time. We went out to survey a particular area, and we realized it was getting light too soon, so we wouldn't be able to get back. The best thing we could do was just to hunker down in a little alcove that we found and some bushes and stuff like that, and stay there and hope that nobody found you. And as it broke daylight, we looked up and we were looking right down the barrel of a gun. It made us a little bit excited, because you could see that, and yet you didn't know until it finally got light and that area was abandoned, and there was an abandoned tank, and you're staring down the barrel of that. It's like they scared you to death. I'd hate to do your laundry. Anyway, we, you know, got back and laughed about that later. But if you can't get back, the only thing you can do is stay where you are until you could make contact. Sometimes they catch up with you. Sometimes you could get back. I had another incident one time on the Rhine River. We were actually in the snowbank above the road, about maybe 6 feet above the road, in a snowbank, observing the road and the Rhine River, which was maybe another 50 yards away. Along came a long column of German soldiers, smoking and talking and walking. And here we are with binoculars and supposed to be observing the whole area, and they walk within probably 20 feet of us. We're in the snowbank, don't even breathe, don't make any kind of sound at all, and they finally walked on. You're that close, and yet you don't dare make any kind of a move at all. So after it was over, well, then you wipe the sweat off your brow and go back and say, well, we hope we won't have to do that again.
I can just imagine the heart pounding in your chest in a moment like that.
Another situation where we were running down the Rhine River with the 11th Armored Division. The tank column was going along. You have lights on, but they're just a little lights, like the tiniest light you can imagine, to keep track of each other. And one of the things that the Americans did was shine lights on the clouds from aircraft carriers from the aircraft search things, and it would light the clouds enough that you could see to move. And so we're on this in this column, and here came out of a side road a column going the opposite direction. They're heading back from where we came, and suddenly I realized that it was about probably 25 vehicles. They were all German soldiers, and all hell broke loose. I'll tell you, that was a mess. We finally, they gave up and captured them. That was where I learned my first German words. It was Rauchen Sie nicht, don't smoke, because we were putting them on top of the 5-gallon tanks in the GI trucks that were full of gas. And they'd get up there on top of that thing, going to light a cigarette. No, you're not going to do that.
And that's a couple times now that you've alluded to your awareness or knowledge of languages. And that's something that, from my understanding, actually distinguished you a little bit over there and gave you some other duties that you might not have had otherwise. Do I have that right?
Well, yeah. The language was fairly easy to pick up. One of the things that they realized that I could communicate pretty easily with whatever group that was around. So they had me take people that were conscripted from various countries back to their home. So they taught me to how to say, I don't speak your language, in that language, and you could communicate pretty well with them. They had a fair good idea that they were going home, but it was a good idea to have an American soldier escort them. So they understood, most of them understood the German Heimgehen means going home. You could talk to them a little bit in their Italian or French or Polish or something. So they taught us how to say, I don't speak your language, in that language, like je ne comprends pas, no capisci italien, prekenti nicht, or ne razumi polski. So there were four different languages there that you could just tell them, hey, I can't talk to you. But the funny thing is that a lot of the European people had a fair knowledge of English anyway. America is the promised land. Everybody wants to come here. And one of the things they realize is they need the language.
Your daughter Sylvia ratted you out on this one. I don't know if you go around telling everybody this, but she said that you took a little shrapnel from a mortar round once upon a time. What happened there?
Well, I was souvenir hunting. We were out there looking around. I thought, maybe I can find a German gun or something. And I'm out because it was a field of several deceased German soldiers. So we're out there in the snow wading around trying to find something like that, and somebody dropped some mortar in, and unfortunately I was trying to run a little bit. You have an overcoat and 6 layers of clothing on, so you can't move very fast. But somehow I picked up a little, just superficial. With all the clothes on, it was amazing that I even got hit at all. I picked up a little bit of shrapnel in one of my wrists and in the right shin. You could have done that with climbing through a barbed wire fence. It wasn't anything enough. Just wipe the blood off, put a bandage on it, and keep going. Actually, you qualified for a Purple Heart, but it was just one more thing to carry, one more thing to keep track of. And I didn't realize at the time that it was going to be worth something later on. But I'm glad I didn't get it anyway. I didn't really deserve it. You're out there looking for freebies and digging around. You're not even fighting, for crying out loud. You're trying to find something. So, no.
Candid memories, vivid descriptions. It's pretty amazing to hear from 97-year-old Robbie Robinson today, isn't it? If you'd like to explore some photos of Mr. Robinson and a short video with him, head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. When we come back, we'll hear what it was like to witness the horrors of a Nazi concentration camp. And on the other end of the emotional spectrum, what he got out of his recent trip to Washington, D.C. with Honor Flight Southern Nevada. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking, and what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.